Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Everyday Black History. Every time we get a chance to sit down and interview someone, it's always a treat, it's always a pleasure. And today we have a sister who's an author, a motivational speaker, and she's out here helping people to change their mindset, helping people in business. We'd like to introduce you to Miss India. Hello and welcome, and how are you today?
I'm good. Thank you very much, Vic. I just wanted to thank you for having me here, first and foremost, because it is a pleasure to always spread the message, but also because, first and foremost, if there's anything we learn from our history or what history has taught us, is that we have to change something. We have to change our approach to how we get what we want from life. So it's a pleasure to be here and to be able to discuss these things and hopefully get the message out there.
All right. Yes, indeed. Okay, so just tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, where did you go to school, if so, where?
Okay, so I was originally born in Jersey. I've been raised in California. I did stay on the East Coast for some time, but my formative years were here in California, and I've had many experiences, and I'll keep it focused on our topic so that I don't go all over the place explaining where I'm from. but I was raised in South Central, Crenshaw and Slauson, anyone from California would know. Okay. So that, it is a black neighborhood. And my mother sent me to an all-white neighborhood or all-white junior high school. So, during junior high years, and then I kind of went to a mixed school in high school. So I mentioned that because they all had an effect on my perception and how I came to my philosophy today. So I graduated from Florida Atlantic University. That's where I got my degree in philosophy. And so here I am today.
Okay. Wow. South Central. Okay. Okay. Now, I just laugh because I'm from Brooklyn. I'm from New York. I'm from the East Coast. So I've only been to California once. I've never been to the South Central or Compton. And so my only Boys in the Hood is my only reference really to Ice Cube and N.W.A. and John Singleton.
So right. That's exactly the neighborhood I grew up in. That's home. But our hoods are nothing like New York hoods. So, kind of have it. It's kind of different, but, a hood is a hood at the same time.
True that. Yes, it is. Okay, mindset coaching. Talk to us about that. How did you get into that? What made you get into wanting to help people change their mindset? Because that's a deep concept.
It is very deep. So I mentioned that I had gone to an all-white junior high school, and I mentioned that because it had an effect on me. When I was raised in South Central, we were all, pretty much black, but we were decent, good black people. It wasn't like we had any hard times, we had the typical childhood, fights and things like that, but it wasn't like a huge, probably like in the jungle or something, but when I went to the white school in Santa Monica, I just saw a whole different type of life, these white kids were all very, very just happy and didn't seem like they had cares in the world. And like I said, we didn't have cares in the world too, but it was like, we kind of had to fight to survive to some extent. Gotten jumped, jumped walking home, people were just jealous of you for one reason or another. So they just want to fight you. It wasn't like that when I went into this other environment. And so I went through this phase where, I became an Oreo, where, I was black on the outside. Well, I was black on the outside and white on the inside. And so I went through this period you know, it's funny, but I went through this period where I obviously didn't like myself because I was trying to be like these people who I thought that, you know, the world was just so great with, right? So I kind of lost my identity. I really did honestly wonder why did God make me black, you know, out of all these, you know, out of all the things that I could be, why would I be black? Because, you know, these other people seemed so happy and they had everything so, you know, so easy. It just seemed like life was great. And so I had this identity crisis. But lo and behold, when I went through high school during the late 80s, early 90s, you know, the Black Conscious era, you know, with with poor Righteous Teachers, you know, KRS-One, And so we were all, you know, Muslims and everything, all starting to, you know, have this Black pride. So I went from going to an Oreo to now I'm all about Black pride. You know, I was like, okay, well, yeah, I joined the Nation of Islam, and all of a sudden I just truly loved myself. You know, it's like, what was I doing, you know, during this other time? And so, you know, I truly, honestly, if it wasn't for the Nation of Islam, I wouldn't know that I would still have the same type of self-love that I do today. I hope I would have, because, you know, we go through phases growing up. But that it was instrumental, the Nation of Islam was instrumental in me finding myself again. But even then, just like Malcolm X, you know, you go through that period because it is necessary, but then you evolve beyond it. There's something more to it than just the white man's the devil, you know? You know, you can't just go through the rest of your life doing that. That's not really going to get you too far. So it came to a point where the Nation of Islam wasn't even providing me with that spiritual growth that I was still seeking. And and so being a philosophy major, you know, you explore everything and you ask all the questions you need to ask. And so I kind of got to this point where you just kind of see that everything is really intertwined, you know, everything, you know, all of life, all of it just comes down to energy. And that's where the law of attraction comes in. You know, it's kind of like everything that exists is based in the same, you know, comes from the same thing. Energy is neither created or destroyed. We are just all different forms of energy, you know.
Right.
So you are a centralized energy station, you know, you as a person, and you can create whatever it is that you want. And this is a reality for all people, you know, any human. It doesn't matter what race you are, we are all human in nature. Nature doesn't know what race you are. You know, race is a human construct.
Right.
So it's a social idea, and it only, you know, it only exists in the minds of people. So outside of nature, or let's say, you know, if you were on an island and it was just you and one other person, let's just say they had pale skin, you guys, you know, the two people have the same abilities, and it comes down to what you do that will determine your success. It's not going to be based on your skin.
Right. True. Very true.
Right.
Very true.
Right.
Absolutely.
So that was the genesis of. It's come from many years of philosophizing, and really what came down to it was when Michael Gardner, you know, in Missouri, when all those riots were happening and we were just, you know, acting crazy, you know, I understand why we were frustrated and things like that, but I felt like there was just a better answer, you know, because we can continue to march and stuff, but A is just messing up our own house. It's like, okay, I'm just gonna tear up my own house, and then maybe they'll change, you know. And the reasoning just doesn't seem like something productive. Again, I understand why they did it, you know, but it's not productive. So it motivated me to want to try to have a positive impact on empowering people, you know, empowering our people because.
Right.
Because the control is in our mind. It's not the external things that we think are controlling us that we experience what we experience. It's all because of how racism has affected our mind that we experience what we experience, you know.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, that makes total sense. That makes total sense.
Right.
Yeah.
So when I developed the program, I changed my mind. It was essentially to show, yes, racism oppresses us, but it oppresses us by implanting the beliefs that we have in our mind, because every man's motivation and behavior starts with their beliefs. Okay, so before we're even born, our culture has taught us, our parents, certain you know, habits of mind, certain ways of seeing things, certain ways of interpreting the world, and
right.
that's what racism is implanting in us. And so that has been implanted for over, you know, 500 years. You know, so it's literally in our culture, that black culture, is what is keeping us where we are.
Right.
You know, it's mm-hmm. that black culture. And I'm not saying black culture meaning African-American culture. I'm talking about black culture.
Right.
Black,
yep.
There's a difference, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
So there's not, so basically I wanted to help show that if we can change our minds, we can do anything. And that's kind of how I got started.
Okay, absolutely. So how long have you been doing it? Did it start in 2014 when with Michael Brown, or was it before then?
So the journey has been since I would say junior high school in 1987, because that's when I started going through the evolution. But the impetus of this, the whole, I started writing the book first. The book, I started writing the book back in 2014 when Michael Gardner, I believe
Gardner,
it was Michael,
yeah.
Was it Brown or Gardner? It could have been, it was one of the Michaels. There were two Michaels.
Yes, yes. I'm not sure what, I'd have to look and see which one was at that time, but it's so sad that we even have to, we had more
exactly,
than one.
Exactly, I know. Exactly, it is true. It is true, but one of them was the one that sparked me to write the book, and so the book has had many stages of evolution. I'm finally just about almost finished with it, and from the book, I developed a coaching program and the speaking, you know, the motivational speaking. So they kind of, and I've been doing that within the past 2 years.
Just to clarify, it's Michael Brown. Michael Brown.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
But
yeah. Okay.
But I just for the record. But
right. Okay.
But okay. So you know, it's it's interesting what you were saying about you know, about our culture and even before you're born, because I was reading a post that you put up, and it says much of who we. And I like that it's in the quotations. Much of who we are, our beliefs, our traditions, the way we see the world, was learned from our parents, who learned from their parents, who learned from their parents, who were slaves. Slavery
exactly.
lives in the mind. Yeah. So
right.
that's a powerful statement, you know.
Right. It's true, and so that's why, and that's why we have to free our minds. That is the last front of how we have been enslaved. So we had the physical chains of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
We've made it past that. Then we had the legal bind of the law, and
right.
we made it past that. I mean, even mm-hmm. though, you know, even though we're not completely free of the law, but the law itself in the book has you know, everyone is the same as far as the law is written in the book, you know, as
right.
far as the legal code. Now, how it plays out in reality is a different story, but
mm-hmm.
in the legal code, everyone is equal. So the last frontier is our mind. You know, it's kind of like that example in the autobiography of Malcolm X, when
mm-hmm.
he says, you know, with the elephant, you know, you see a big, you know, two-ton elephant being tied, you know, held in place with a little rope on a little pole.
Right.
And, you know, you look at the elephant and, you know, you and I know he can break that pole and just walk away.
Mm-hmm.
But because he was trained from a baby, he thinks that he still is tied to that pole. And that's exactly, it's such a perfect example because That's exactly how it is with us. You know, we had these chains, and then we had these, you know, the laws that reinforced it. Mm-hmm. And so now we don't need either of those because we're tethered to the bottom with our mind, with our belief, you know.
Right.
And so,
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't need those things. But yeah, so we were speaking about, or we had mentioned, you know, the keys to Black success or success for our community.
Mm-hmm.
And I was having a conversation with someone else, and you know, they really took offense to, you know, kind of what I was saying, because they said, you know, well, if we don't advocate for ourselves, then who's going to do it, and things like that. And you know, I'm not saying don't advocate, you know, for for each other. I'm just saying, you know. You know, we can look at Black success, you know, a bunch of different ways. I mean, we can look at it, you know, do we mean, when we say that we want Black success or success for Black people, does that mean that that we just don't want racism at all? So does that mean that if we eradicate racism, we must eradicate racism from the conscience of people? Is that what success is? Because obviously that's not going to happen. You know, not going to happen. That's a fairy tale. Or are we judging it by being accepted by society? Now, whether society finally validates us and say, okay, you're equal, is that it? Because that's probably unlikely going to happen too, because racism is the safety net for the country.
Right,
you know,
it's
built into the structure of the country. So we can't,
absolutely,
you know, that's not going to happen either. So the only real definition of success is how well you're living your life, you know,
right,
how each individual can live their own life. And because racism is not everywhere, it's not omnipresent. It's not existing every moment, all the time, for everybody. You
mm-hmm.
know, there's incidents of racism and police violence and things like that, that they play on the news to keep us all in fear.
Right.
But in day-to-day life, you don't really come across all that. You know, there might be some transgressions and things like that, but it's not to where your whole life is affected and you're paralyzed, you know?
Gotcha.
So if that's the case, then there is room for you to do what you want to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, and create the life that you want for yourself. And to be honest, even if there was, you know, some case where you were confined by racism, you know, through the law of attraction, and a lot of us might not believe in the law of attraction, but it is very real. It's not a theory. It's science. You know, you just have to, if you believe in it, it works for you. If you don't believe in it, it works for you, because you are always attracting to you the what you have, you know, what exists in your mind.
Right.
So if you can replace the things that you have in your mind, you can create different realities. And that is including, you know, things that you feel are impossible. You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. No doubt. So, as a motivational speaker and as a mindset coach, do you feel like you're taking on people's traumas and insecurity when you're there, you know, motivating? Do you feel like you take on, I mean, when you leave around groups of people who you're motivating and who you're helping out, do you feel like you leave it all, that insecurity, like, you know, that energy?
Right. No, because a lot of times you're breaking through that.
Okay.
So they might have traumas. And see, coaching is different than counseling.
Gotcha.
Because counseling is going backwards, looking into childhood and things like that. Coaching is future pacing. So that means you're having them look forward rather than backwards.
Gotcha.
So you might have certain people who are dealing with certain blockages that are keeping them from moving forward. But in that moment, right there at that time, you discover something that will lift that belief or break through, help them break through whatever that belief or that, because whatever the trauma was, caused a particular belief and interior, mm-hmm. you know, interior belief about themselves. So you help them break through that, and then they are free, and they feel lighter, and they're freer to move forward towards their whatever their goal might be.
Right. Okay. All right. So when we first were communicating through email, you mentioned new ways to in which Black people, minorities can overcome racism. So what are your ideas on some new ways in which that could happen, especially in 2021?
So it all ties into what I've been saying, and that is to stop looking at the external. So we have locus of control. You have an internal locus of control, and you have an external locus of control. So the area of control, that which you have the most control over, is that which is inside you, which are your thoughts and your beliefs. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts and your beliefs create behavior, and they attract certain energy back to you. Those are the two things you have the 100% control over, and no one can take that away from you. No matter, if you're in jail and you have no freedom, you always have the freedom to think what you want to think, right? Mm-hmm. So right now, 99% of our community, or let me just say majority of our community, places the locus of control on something outside of them. They want white people to change, mm-hmm. right? They want society to change. And they, to change, how racism affects them. And yes, I know when it comes to like police brutality or Karen calling you or, barbecuing while Black and things like that.
Right.
Yeah, we don't want that. We don't want that. But again, it's not every single one of us that are doing that. So when the only real change that we can make on racism is to not let it hold us down. Okay, so there's an aspect of racism that holds us down, and then there's an aspect of racism that we allow it to hold us down. Okay, uh-huh. So if we changed how we deal with it. Okay, so let me put it this way. Racism is a cycle, right? You have positive and negative energy, or you have, let's say, hot and cold energy. I should say hot and cold instead of positive. When you have a hurricane or a tornado, it needs that hot and cold air to fuel each other for that wind to start spinning, right? It needs that hot. So you have racism from white people, and then you have really racism from Black people. And what I mean by that is the belief in the system of racism. So in other words, when white people deal with us on the basis of race, and we want to be treated differently on the basis of race, they kind of fuel each other. So if we want to move past racism, mm-hmm. we're going to have to go outside of the realm of race. So Einstein said, you cannot solve a problem with the same thinking that created it, right?
So
you can't solve racism with racism. And whenever you are operating within the paradigm of race, then you're going to have the same problem. The only way to move past it is to deal with these things on something other than race. So, for example, Michael Brown, Michael Gardner, everyone that has been wronged on the basis of race, our immediate reaction is this Black man has, was mistreated, right? Mm-hmm. And that is keeping it within the confines of race. But if we start arguing the case or defending him and fighting for justice on the case of this man was treated inhumanely, this was inhumane treatment of a human being,
right?
Then it kind of takes it out of the paradigm of race. And I'm not saying this is going to be perfect the next day. It's going to be an evolution, but we got to start it. We got to start saying, okay, this is just a man who was, unjustly treated. So when we go outside of that race, then we have, then people can kind of jump on board, because when you say Black, automatically, there's going to be a bunch of people who are against black who just can't get on the same board, the same plane as you. But
right.
If you kind of just put it in that frame of humanity, people, you know, I'm not saying it's going to be perfect and it's just going to happen right away, but it can open the door to allow people to see him as a human rather than just a black man, you know?
You're absolutely right. Yeah, absolutely right, 100% with that,
right.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So I just think that I know we are stuck on this whole black thing, but the whole black thing is something that white people gave us. You know, I call them a blacksmith because they created this whole, they created our identity. I didn't like calling them masters, like slave masters, right? That whole idea of just saying, when I was writing my book and saying about the slave, I didn't like those words coming out my mouth because that encourages the whole superiority, frame that they want to create.
Right.
So I replaced that with the blacksmith because that's exactly what they did. They took us as Africans with no identity, I mean with our own identity, and created us into something called black, which is a slave, you know.
Right.
So they
right.
so they are blacksmiths, and so you know, I forgot where I was going with that, but yeah, we need to get out of our own image of us being black because that's what's holding us down.
Okay. Wow. All right. Okay. So now you mentioned your book. So tell us a little more about your book.
So the book is called Un-Black Conscience because we are, you know, it's a play on black conscience, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was because I came up in the black conscience and it was all everything black, which was, like I said, it was a great time.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, that consciousness of being black is the image that someone else has given us.
Right.
It is not our identity, you know. So we have to focus on being humans or being Americans, whatever the case may be, you know, just not black. You know,
right.
we have to shed that whole identity because that was given to us. It's like the prison, what do they call it? Like the orange suits that they give you when you go into prison, you know?
Right, the jumpsuits.
Yeah, the jumpsuits. I, you know, whenever I think about black, that's what I think about because, like, we came on the ships and they gave us one of those orange suits and then now we're just prisoners, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what black represents to me, you know? It represents that orange jumpsuit. Because I know we like to make everything fashionable. You know, we can make anything cool. You know what I'm saying? We can make
True.
Anything cool, you know,
right.
but at the same
True.
Time, we need to create our own, or at least embrace our own humanity and not embrace this thing that they've created for us.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's interesting, like what you said about when you take the race out of something, because, you know, even like there are some white people who, you know, when the whole Black Lives Matter first started, before it became, you know, vilified in the media, when it first started, there was some people who, some white people who would have got on board with it, but they just couldn't get past the name because in their minds,
exactly,
you know, it's saying
exactly
nobody
exactly.
else matters. Yeah,
exactly. This is my whole point. And so once you put black in there, it shuts out a whole group of people. You know,
right.
because they just, you know, it feels like, you know, it's white against black or it's this and that. And it's, even though we're saying, no, we're not saying that,
right.
just having it there puts it in that perspective. So,
right.
you know, if you, you know, so, you know, that's, I'm glad you mentioned that because that's exactly what I'm saying.
And that's when they started with the all lives matter. And then you,
right.
you know, you got to go into this explanation of why they call themselves, you know, the organization Black Lives Matter, and then you start going around in circles. So,
right,
you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that. That is very very true.
Right.
So,
right.
So your book Unconscious Black, where can it be found? Is it Amazon or like where can you find the book?
Yeah, no. So it's in its final editing stage. It's not out yet, but
gotcha. Okay.
I may or may not sell it on Amazon. I've been looking at that, but I might. I have a my manager has a. We might take a different route, so it may be on. A, you know, I would like to put it on Amazon just because of the reach that Amazon has, but you know, they kind of take a big cut. And so I'm just looking at all options, you know.
Right.
Looking at all options. But yeah, it's, can I mention my social media handles?
Absolutely.
So they'll be able to, you know, get on the waiting list there. So it's NDINDI Changed Her Mind. So Indy Changed Her Mind, and that's on Facebook and Instagram. So it's INDI Changed Her Mind. And there'll be links there and ways that you can get on the waiting list for the book and or have me speak and or join the coaching program.
Right. Okay. Yes, definitely. So when your book actually is, you know, when it's released, please reach out. We would love to have you back on again and we can talk in more detail about the book and, you know, really get it out there and promote it because, you know, it's important. It's about everything that you're saying is important for more people to hear.
I appreciate that. Yes, I do believe that. And, you know, once I had the thought, I have never wavered from it. It's like this has been my mission. This has been my mission and this is my life mission. So it's just the only thing I want to do now. And, you know, at first I was kind of scared because some people, you know, there's going to be those people and there's always going to be those people. So that are stuck in that slave mentality and don't want to hear this type of stuff. You know, they don't want to hear that. But there's also always going to be the people who are progressive and forward looking and people who understand that responsibility is the first step to success. You know, we got to embrace our own power first and foremost, you know.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause I can imagine. I'm sure you've gotten in a lot of debates about this.
Most definitely, yes. I've had people, you know, just make it into a whole fight when all I'm trying to do is uplift. You know, I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not trying to down anybody. I'm just trying to uplift. And if you don't like it, just you just don't like it. But I can just tell you, these are the laws of success. I didn't create them. I'm telling you from every successful person who is successful, what they've taught. And so you're not arguing against me. You're arguing against people who have already made it, you know, not you specifically, but the people, you know. And actually, it's the Bible teaches as well. So, you know, it's all I'm doing is packaging it for a particular group of people.
Right. No doubt. You know, no doubt.
So.
Well, Miss India, it's been a pleasure having you on Everyday Black History today.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, and we hope to hear from you soon. I'll be in touch, and definitely want to talk to you again and hear more of your thoughts on so many other things.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm here anytime, and hopefully we can do other things in the future as well.
Yes, indeed. You enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
All right, you too. Take care.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you have it, folks. That's Miss India. It's been a pleasure talking to her. As you can see, she has a lot of, you know, thoughts on things, and some of the things that she said you may or may not agree with, but she made some great points, and these are, you know, conversations that we all should be having. You know, her book, Unconscious Black, you know, when it comes out, definitely go pick it up. Definitely go support this sister. Because, you know, it is important with what she's doing, you know. So that concludes this episode of Everyday Black History. And just stay tuned for next episode as we'll be coming at you soon. Take care.